You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 190. My name is Clark from 5cardguys.com and 5cardguys on Instagram. Co-hosting with me as usual is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards and John, who is Trade You at Recess. All right, it's a special episode today because we have a special guest interview, which we'll play later on in the show. And if you're on IG and you follow Stock and Trade, you're in for a treat because we talked to him about his hobby journey and all the positive hobby content he's been putting out. But before we do, off the top, by the time this episode airs, it'll be about a week left until the release of 2024 Top Series 1 Baseball. We've talked about it a couple of times already on this podcast. And, you know, as we get closer to the release date, there are more details being revealed about what we can find in the 2024 set. So, like I said, we already talked about it. We talked about the look and design of the card. We gave our thoughts. Now I want to talk about some of the subsets and inserts that you can find inside 2024 Tops, okay? One, there's a true photo variation card, which is essentially the base card design with that thin electric-looking border, which is completely removed. So you're left with just the photo, essentially. Think about it like a stadium club kind of card. So that's a true photo variation card. Let's go one by one. What do you guys think about that?
I love variation card. I freaking love it. I always said that. Like, I wish they did something different for variations. Something different. And I think stadium club did it too, but they had like the 92 inserts or whatever, but it was like a photo variation of the 92 inserts. So I was always a fan of that, what Stadium Club did with the photography, even the full image. I thought, like, you know, the borders get old sometimes, so you want to see something different, something more rare, which it seems to be that it is short printed. I don't know to what. In terms of, because I believe they still have the SSP, that golden
mirror
yes, still. Do. So this is outside of it. So this is outside of that. So I'm a huge fan. I think they're going to be very popular cards. I would be also, you know, I like iconic moments, or I like the action shots that are good, you know. Hopefully they come up with some good ones for some rookies that are highly desirable and collectible.
Okay. And I think Vladdy has a Gatorade one.
Does he? See, Gatorade's been overdone too much now. It's like, you know, Soto's, agreed. There's only Soto's and Soto claimed it in 2018.
I agree. Yeah. Anyway.
I second that. I love it. We all love Stadium Club. We all, the reasons why we love Stadium Club. This is perfect. This is like Pokemon retro cards versus full art, you know, like
right.
This is what you want. Photo variation. I think that's an excellent, fantastic idea. Yeah. Love it.
Yep. I agree. Nothing more to say. Okay. Another variation is the team color variations. I'm not sure if this is new to the 2024 Tops.
It is.
Or if it's in previous set. Is it new?
Yeah, okay. It's new.
Okay, so it's a case hit, apparently. And if you're not familiar with the team color variation, it looks like it, the border. So if you look at the border, it has their team colors and their team logo all around the main photo.
Yeah.
So
I think it looks gimmicky. I've seen the image. It looks gimmicky at first, but the more you look at it and I think compare it to a base card, you're going to be like, yo, this card is sick. This card actually looks sick. That's what I'm saying. If you first see it, it's going to look too gimmicky. But then you keep on looking at it, you're like, you know what? This is a pretty cool card. And if it's like super rare, as long as they keep it super rare. And I'll say one thing about this. I hope to God that they do not put this in Topps Chrome. I want this a paper exclusive because I have my other thoughts on 2024 that I think paper, they should go all out with parallels, because paper is such a boring rip. There's so many of it. It's like load the parallels there. You protect Topps Chrome. Just have the true parallel colors. No special sparkles or whatever. Just do like a green, blues at 150, purples. You could do purples refractors, then blues, then greens, then gold, orange, and red. And that's it. Leave Topps Chrome as is. Don't put no color variations or team variations or anything like that in the Topps Chrome product. Keep it all paper. And I think there will be more demand for stuff like that in paper. Paper needs more love.
Well said.
Yep. The concept, like what you're saying, not only the team color, but the graphic of the team logo all around the border. You know, like I haven't seen it, but that sounds amazing. And I think if you are any, you know, for your own team and collecting all the players from the team of that variation, I think that's such a, I could see our buddy Will, like that's going to be a thing that he goes for the Toronto Blue Jays. So, yeah, I love it. Great, great concept. Great idea. See, I like this. Like, I like how the variations this time, they are putting some thought into it for the collector. Like there's a, you know, like collectors like Stadium Club, they love the imagery. Collectors like team color match, you know, all of that stuff. I like that there's thought behind the variation rather than just doing donut circles and sparkle foil and, you know, things that are quite meaningless other than to increase print run.
I put it up on the screen for John so he can actually take a look at it. Can I be honest? I think I got to look at it more, Hyung. Because I do think it's a little gimmicky.
It is.
And maybe it is. Maybe it is actually one of those things where
some of them don't look that good. Now that I'm looking at it.
I think they'll look better if you look at it close up. But I think, I think they're very gimmicky at first.
I like the solid border ones.
But I think you're going to get so bored of base cards that they're going to pop.
Yeah.
I think you got to look at it beside a base card.
The Oakland one that I saw there, it looks kind of kiddish, but almost like the Halloween parallel. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good comp.
Yeah.
But I do agree with what you said, Hyung. Like the parallels for the paper product, sure. Great place to put it. Yeah. So it'll be more fun to get parallels like that in a pack rather than just ripping tons and tons of just base cards.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
So, yeah. And you know, like, you know, we've done episodes where we're trying to brainstorm what subsets you can collect. You know, the more, the merrier in this case, because, you know, you could collect the subset you like. Like, some people might love these team color variations.
Right.
Right. And I know it's just, listen, the one knock I have about this is that it's a case hit, apparently. But guess what? The home field advantage was supposed to be a case hit. There's a ton out there, okay? So
there's a lot of cases out there, though.
That's true. You notice, you realize that's the truth for sure. Not that I'm complaining, because I was able to complete the set. If it was that rare, I don't know if I would have. But speaking of home field advantage, that is a subset. Of course, they're continuing.
That is. Oh, boy.
This year.
You're going to have to
do it again. No, I'm not going to go for it. No.
You should do the team parallel. I think the team parallel is pretty cool.
We'll see. If anything, the true photo variation would be something that would change for sure. That'd be a cool set.
Is it every player? Yeah. Or is it select? We don't know.
It's a good question. I don't know yet. I don't know, yeah.
I hope it's not every player.
For everyone.
I hope not.
Oh. Yeah, that'd be hard to complete if it was. But I think there's a Ronald Acuna. I think that was a mock-up of his...
Yeah, which is sick. I would want that card.
I'll look into it. Okay, let's go on to the next one. The next parallel I want to talk about is the real one parallel, which Topps Heritage collectors will know the look and feel of the card, okay? That look and feel will be a parallel on the 35th anniversary cards, which is in the 2024 Topps set, and it's a tribute this year to the 1989 card design. It goes 35 years prior to the current year, right? So any thoughts on that?
I love it.
The 35th anniversary card being the parallel of the real one parallel.
I love it because, one, we all grew up in this era. Like, I vividly remember ripping Topps 1989, and that design is so embedded. And obviously you have Ken Griffey Jr.'s iconic card coming out of that set too, as well. So yeah. or at least one of his cards. But yeah, I like this design a lot. I think it would be really cool to have an auto come out of that with, because I think there's like Mike Trout, there's Mike Trout auto in that subset. Right. So there's some really cool cards in that design. I think that 1989 subset is a really cool subset with the autos. But just as an insert as well, I'm a fan.
Yeah, not much else to add. 100%. 100% in. Love it.
Yep. All right, me too. You know how I love my Topps Heritage look and feel as well. So this is a double bonus to be in the 2024 Topps Series 1 set. All right, I'm going to do this kind of rapid fire. Heavy Lumber. If you never heard of this subset, it offers 20 of the league's best hitters on wood grained cards. I don't know if that's too gimmicky for you, but they'll be limited to just 500 of each player.
Is it game used?
That's a good question. I don't imagine it would be.
Okay, so it's just the design. I mean, for me, it's like any more parallels and inserts that are rare are good for paper. I think that's what paper is lacking. It's like more collectability. I haven't seen this insert, so I'm sure it's just a any insert, nothing special, but I can't be against inserts at this point in paper. So
yeah,
fair enough.
I'm more on board with making different rare inserts, as you know, if there's many case hits, you know, there's like 12 case hits, then that means you're pretty much getting one case hit per box. I think that's a cool chase rather than a whole bunch of nonsense numbered colored parallels. I think I'd rather have rare inserts over numbered parallels. Maybe that's a bit of a hot take, but if they need to add cards for the sake of chase ratio versus print run, I prefer continue adding different inserts that are rare rather than brand new parallel cards. So I am on board with the rare insert idea for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll pass on the Heavy Lumber. Sounds a little bit too gimmicky for me. But this next one, I'm a big fan of. You know, I'm on record saying I'm a big fan of. They're bringing it back, the social media follow back redemption cards. Come on. Are you guys on board now? Like, here's the list this year of who can potentially follow you back. Okay, here we go. Corey Seager, Anthony Volpe, Chris Bryant, Jonathan India, Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, Jordan Walker, Matt Olson, Juan Soto, and Julio Rodriguez. Come on.
I mean, no? It's you guys are yeah, strong. You know what? Like I said, if I pulled that card, would I be thrilled? Would I be jumping up and down? Probably not, but I mean, it's better than just the cardboard. You know what I mean?
Like, there's utility.
Yeah, there's some kind of utility. So how can I hate on that, really? It's, you know what I mean? Right. It's as long as there's something, you know, I'm getting something from it. Like, it's not that, but it's not like, oh my God, I'm going to get a follow by Jordan Walker. John, you got to stop what you're doing. I'm going to get a follow back. It's not even a conversation, a follow back. You know?
It could be a start of a great relationship, all right? That's all I'm saying. It's
like you add, hey, Jordan, what's up, man? Unfollow.
I'm like, come on. Where's the contractual obligation there? All right. Oh, and then last thing, that was only for jokes, but I'm curious about what, I should have Will on this show, but the sketch cards are back. Oh, one of one hand-drawn sketch cards featuring current stars and former greats. You like that or no?
I wish paper had better one of ones, to be honest. Like, you super fractor platinums are so boring. Like, you don't half the time you don't even know that it's a one of one and it's the platinum, right? And platinum to me is like platinum, like that's the heavy metal, but like it looks like a dark matte gray. You know what I mean? So there's no hype on that. So I would hope that, like, the one of one sketch card's cool, but I would hope that, you know, something, you know, is like better. I like the sketch card. Don't get me wrong. Like I don't mind it. But my complaint is more of one in paper in general. Like, they're boring.
Sure.
They just need to find a way to make it like, wow, that should be made out of gold. You know what I mean? For the amount of money, right. You know, that it's worth, right? So.
Yep. I hear you.
I don't mind sketch cards.
Were the last year, did they have sketch cards last year or the year before? One of the years they did, right? I don't mind the sketch card as long as the sketch card is a sketch of the actual card. I don't like it when the artist creates a brand new image, like a portrait of Tatis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like his card from the year is him like making this crazy dive and it looks like a cool card. But then the sketch is just some random portrait of Tatis. Like I'm not a big fan of that. No offense to the artist, but I think if an artist attempts to draw the actual card and it looks like a sketch one of one of the card, like a parallel, I'm on board with that. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the sketch card would look like. I don't think I've ever actually seen one. I've only seen it in like Star Wars or non-trading cards. So if it's like that, then it might not be a sketch of the actual card.
Mm.
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see what it looks like. All right. Well, that's some of the things. You know, like all said, I'm really excited about Top Series 1 as I usually am because that means baseball's just around the corner. But with all these inserts, like you always want to get some kind of quote-unquote hit. And this is just a kind of a fun rip. It's usually 80, 90 bucks. Not going to break the bank either. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it.
One last thing I will say on 2024 Series 1. I thought Fanatics did an amazing job with the box, with the design. Little things like that, I'm seeing the change and difference just coming from a marketing standpoint. To me, the Acuna image they use, the way they designed the box, totally different feel than previous generations. It's literally gone from just basically literally a small sports card company Tops to now more marketing and brandable, you know, more exciting, more feeling of I want to rip. So I will say that I'm a huge fan of the design outside the box. So we'll see how the experience is, but slowly I'm seeing the improvements in places that Tops kind of took for granted. They thought this is fine. You know, even like images, picking proper images and stuff. It's like little details like card collectors, they want that. They don't want the same image for every single set in 2024 now, right? Take some time. Yep. You know, spend some love on the product and produce a good product. So I'm looking forward to that. I think that's what they're starting to do, Fanatics, that is.
Mm. Good point. Because in marketing, packaging is a very big deal, whether you believe it or not. I'm just seeing the image now. You're right. It actually does look really nice.
My rip level went up to like from a 6 to a 9 now.
Oh, well, totally agree with everything you said. And you know what? I'll make it one more shout out. The 2023 Top Stadium Club also just got released. Shout out to Stadium Club. We always, on this podcast at least, like to promote Stadium Club as much as possible. Very underrated set. And I'm tempted to get one this year. So a lot of ripping to do in 20.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
24, that's for sure. Okay, with that, let's now play the interview I had earlier with Stock and Trade. Okay, today we have a special guest on the podcast, and he happens to be our first guest of 2024. We're excited to have Raul Bustamante, aka Stock and Trade, on the show because he brings much needed humor into the hobby content space. We know there are serious things to talk about in the hobby, but stock, he reminds us, the hobby is supposed to be a fun place. And if you check out his Instagram page, which already has thousands of followers, his content will make you laugh. And you'll also see that he's a true collector as well. So you can also hear him. If that's not enough, you can also hear him on his own podcast, Unboxing the Hobby, with his co-host, Matt Gamble, who we also had on our podcast last year. And we'll get into that as well later in this interview. But without further ado, Stock, welcome to the show.
Man, I appreciate it. It's an honor to be the first guest of 2024, I'll tell you that.
Well, we're glad to have you on. So yeah, can't wait to hear more about your hobby journey. And that's where we usually like to start with all our guests, you know. So can you tell us, when did you start collecting? What did you like to collect, or what do you like to collect? And all the way up to now, how did you transition from not only being a collector, but now making hobby content for everyone?
Yeah, man. So as a kid, I collected a lot of different stuff. I was a big like toy kid. I loved like He-Man. I loved G.I. Joe. So that evolved into me playing sports as a teenager and then collecting sports cards, but also still always loving toys. Like, I'm actually surprised I don't have as many toys as I have now. I took a long break. I thought that, you know, I was figuring out how to be an adult. So, and then got back into the hobby during COVID, like a lot of other people. I had nothing else going on. And I was like, oh my God, people are still like collecting cards and toys and comics. And this is cool. Yeah. So jumped feet first into that, made some terrible, terrible mistakes early on. And then, and then learned really quickly. And then, course corrected there. But ever since 2020, man, it was just a slippery slope of, oh yeah, I'll just, you know, I'll post some cards and see how this goes on Instagram. Maybe I'll make a separate account. Oh, well, maybe I'll put my face out there. Oh, maybe I'll just start making content every day. And it just evolved into this really awesome community of people, you know, like yourselves and everybody else in the hobby for the most part, that really just we're all here doing the same thing, just geeking out over silly cards that we really enjoy having in our lives. So that's kind of been the journey, in its shortest form possible.
Nice. Yeah, you know, all those details sound very familiar. Right? I feel like we're all part of this club where, yeah, anyone that grew up with sports cards or collectibles in general, there's that common, you know, break in between where we grow up a little bit, and then we all come back because of nostalgia and all these other reasons. So it's kind of like a reunion in a way. All these collectors coming together and just talking about sports cards or trading cards in general.
Yeah, I make jokes about it because like I've never been to a card show in my life. Like I never went to one until I was 42 years old. And then I went to my first card show and I was like, oh my God, this is what I've been missing. Like everyone in the same room, all basically like enjoying similar things. Like some people hate some of the things I like, but for the most part, we're all into it for the same reason. So it's,
so funny.
It's been a cool journey.
Yeah. You know what? Thinking about it, I didn't go to a card show until I was in my 40s as well. Cause I didn't go to it as a kid. Oh. Just went to your LCS, about it, right?
Yeah. I don't know about you, but my LCS was always like, there were always these weird, you know, like jumbled stores of like, it was comics, it was TCG, it was cards, it was like, there was a couple video games in the store that your kids wanted to play. So
random.
Yeah, it was like, there was nothing ever very specific about anything. It was just like, all right, we'll go to the corner of the store that you want to go to and then I'll meet you at the end.
that's so funny. Well, I want to go back into how you started creating hobby content, and it's similar to when we talked with Mac. You know, you decided to take a more lighthearted approach to hobby content versus the more serious. You know, follow all the hobby controversies, give hobby hot takes here and there, kind of approach, like you know many other channels and creators do, which is fine. But any particular reason why you wanted to take the approach that you ended up taking?
Man, I've always like took a very good stance on things in my life of if you're not having fun doing it, then you shouldn't probably be doing it. Obviously, you know, circumstances arise in people's lives where you kind of just have to, you know, gut things out and deal with stuff. But for me, for jobs, like my day job is an actor. You know, I learned years ago that like, oh, well, I love doing this. I can probably make my way through it and make some money. And that's how I looked at it for the hobby standpoint. I was like, why am I going to sit here and make content that it like gets me mad or irritates me. And for the most part, right. to be honest, nothing in the hobby really irritates me because I'm just like, what's the big deal? We're all collecting, we're all collecting these cards, these rectangular pieces of cardboard with people's faces and bodies on them. So it's like, for me, it was more about just, I want to have fun doing this as my hobby. And at no point in time do I want to, upset people just for the sake of upsetting people.
That's a great perspective that more and more people should have. and you know, when you said your daytime job was an actor, it makes total sense because your channel is like, I could never do what you're doing, kind of like almost like performance art in a way, and all these things. So it makes connecting the dots right now.
Yeah, it's always, I tell everybody the same thing because Mac has said that to me before. But I always say the same thing, like if anybody could do what I do, they actually have real live monkeys that do what I do on camera. So you guys will be okay if you just try a couple times, you'll be fine. But I appreciate it.
Well, I kind of teased this at the top, but I wanted to talk about your podcast with Mac and it is called Unboxing the Hobby. And for the record, on the podcast episode I did with Mac, I believe I mentioned that both of you guys, because I've been following both your content, but both of you guys having a podcast together was a no-brainer. It just made total sense. So I like to take partial credit in the creation of Unboxing the Hobby, if that's okay.
Perfect. You can have a piece. It's like we have board members. We have a few people like yourself. They're like, do you remember when I told you that? I'm like, fine. You guys can all have a share of equity in our podcast.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm going through your podcast episodes and I've already listened to quite a few of them. And you guys have already had plenty of great guests on your show, like Mama Breaks. Those are the most recent one that I heard. And of course, our good friend, Denny, who's been on our show a couple of times as well, Denny Cards, shout out to him. But is there anything you've learned from doing a podcast in general and anything you've learned from interviewing any of your guests about the hobby?
Yeah. The thing that I've learned about doing a podcast is if I was doing a podcast by myself, I would have gotten one or two episodes done and then quit immediately. Having Mac as my partner has definitely helped us keep this going because we share the load of, it doesn't seem like a lot of work because people are like, oh, podcasts are so easy. It's low overhead. But I'm like, finding guests, like recording, editing, uploading, then all this stuff goes into it. So thanks to Mac that we get to share it. That's the biggest thing. The second thing with podcasts is, I forgot how much I really enjoyed like talking to people about their stories. And that was always our goal with the podcast. It wasn't about talking about hobby news. It wasn't, tell us what you think about Tops and Panini. It was just, we want to hear your journey. We want to hear what drives you. And a lot of these people, including yourself, are all entrepreneurs in some way, shape or form. So we find it very motivating for a lot of people to listen to hear and learn of how these people are each doing their own thing on the day to day. It keeps them going and making them successful. So that's been the best takeaways from the podcast for sure.
Nice. That's totally true. And we've said it before on our podcast, but the more the hobby grows, we have to expect more hobby content, which, we love hearing different perspectives, different styles. Yeah. You know what I mean? And even when we interview the same guest, like you talk about different things with different friends talk about different things with other friends and you have mutual friends for a reason. Right. So I love that about listening to other people's content. I think some people might think it's all competitive, but that's why there's a lot of crossover. And that's what I love to see in the hobby. There seems to be naturally a lot of crossover. Like everyone's doing their own thing, but we're coming together sometimes at these card shows and other times just online. And it's amazing to see that.
Man, that's the thing is like, I think the hard part about, the hobby and then just most businesses in life or things like that, or a lot of people think of it as competitiveness or competition.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's like, you should just think of it as a collaboration. I mean, I'm on your podcast right now. You've had Mac on, I'd love for you guys to be on ours. Like none of this is competition. It's just all some sort of collaboration that'll help us each grow. Cause as soon as it becomes a competition, that's when, I'm going to stay stagnant and be angry about someone succeeding, in doing something. But I agree.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. One last thing about the podcast. I know you guys are sponsored by Loop and, you talked about like other guests that you had and their entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to see like just different collectors getting into the space and growing, like you said, just kind of learning from others. So I'm wondering from that standpoint, like from partnerships in the hobby, you know, obviously makes things easier for creators like us to continue making content, right? Yeah. And so, for any, I guess, newer content creators, just wondering how did that particular partnership start? And in general, since making your content, have you seen more companies noticing you guys? And is that how it's been working so far?
Yeah, I mean, the partnership with Loop was very much just, you know, dumb luck. I mean, I say that, but obviously we put effort and energy into our content. But the CEO of Loop reached out to me randomly on Instagram, was like, hey, I like your content. We'd love to have a chat about, you know, partnerships or just doing content for Loop. And I was already on Loop buying cards, so I knew exactly who they were. And I was like, yeah, sure, it's great. And I talked to Mac about it, and we pitched the idea of the sponsorship and, you know, making a little bit of money to, like you said, help us, you know, continue this journey. And that was the biggest thing, is like, all I can say to people, you know, trying to do it, is I know there's people out there that, you know, some people don't love the idea of partnerships because they think it's some sort of like selling out or, you know, taking away from the hobby. But for me, it's all about knowing your worth. And look, if a company is going to come to you and ask you to do something and you like the company and you feel like it's worth it, you should be able to make some sort of money from that.
Yeah, because, totally.
You know, it's like a commercial. It's like anything. So for me, I'm all about partnerships. I think it's a great way to help grow the hobby. I think it's a great way for people to make some money to help them grow their collections or continue their content creation. So, but yeah, all I can say is do that. And yeah, your third question was, we've seen more and more people reach out to us in regards to doing things. But for me, I'm a little more selective about what I will and won't do. And it's not a knock on anybody's business. Just some businesses just don't. I just don't use one, or it doesn't work. So if I'm not using your product or if something similar, there's no reason why I should be telling people on my channel to be like, oh yeah, you should use this. It's great. And it's like, no amount of money they're going to send me is going to be worth me going down the rabbit hole of that whole fight with people.
Right. Sure.
But but to each their own. Is also a thing. So that's not my style, but if that's something that somebody wants to do and they want to just get as many partnerships as possible, no matter what, go for it. Make some money. Have some fun.
Yeah. There you go. I think we're more aligned with how your approach is, because it's for me, like, we've done partnerships with Candy Digital and StockX. And then it's more like you said, like, we're already using it. So it seems less work just to talk about it anyways.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're just telling a friend, I'm on this platform, I buy a few things here and there from it, and this is my experience. Whereas if I didn't use the product, it would be like work for me. Like, we have to research it. Do I actually like it? And all that stuff. So that, you know, that's what it comes down to us. But yeah, I agree with your points in terms of which partnerships to go for. And again, to each their own. But I love hearing your perspective on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay, you've got your IG page and your podcast, right? And you know, one reason why we love having fellow hobby content creators on the show is to see how you guys stay on top of creating consistent content. And we were just talking about partnerships, right? Like, a lot of it's just creating consistent content to get noticed, you know, and you never know who's going to reach out at any point in time. So, but having said that, that's probably the most difficult thing to do, how to be consistent with your content. Like, you know, sometimes there are days you just don't want to put anything out, but you feel like, you know, I should put something out just to be consistent. So I was wondering if you had any tips on you know, for new content creators on how to do that.
Yeah, man, the biggest tip that I have is out of anything, because obviously creativity and everything is just going to come with it, but is bulking your content out, like, for the most part. So I spend, I'll take a couple days out of the week and I'll try and shoot 5 to 8, just at least start, I call them starter videos. You know, you don't need to, at least in my eyes, you don't need to complete the reel or complete whatever video you're doing.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So for me, I bulk stuff out that I think is going to be funny or interesting, or that I think can go can match with something that's going to pop out in the hobby in some way, shape, or form. And then I have like, you know, 10-ish of those set up for however long, and then I can obviously interject any videos that I can do in real time. But I find that that is super helpful with not making it feel like you're so inundated every single day with having to do something relevant, you know? Because, and that's what's very helpful and why I like the comedy stuff, is sometimes it's relevant, sometimes it's just not. And it's okay, because I just want to make people laugh anyway. But that is the biggest thing. And second was, for me, is just put it out. Like, it doesn't need to be perfect. If you see it, you spelled something wrong, or you think that you messed up, you know, just put it out. No one cares. Everyone is just kind of scrolling, and they just want to be entertained or informed in some way, shape, or form. So those are the two biggest tips that I try and give to everybody, is just for time management, and then just for just doing it. Otherwise, you just get stuck in a rut.
Amazing advice. Yeah, I haven't done the bulk approach yet, but something I definitely consider doing.
Yeah.
But the second one is go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I wanted to ask you, like, back to you, because I always loved learning from people, especially being on your podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, for your guys' content, like, what are you doing? Like, are you just doing it daily? Are you seeing, like, a specific card that comes up, you know, that you're like, oh, wait, I want to make, you know, I want to find out where the, you know, where this came from, or how it's selling, or things like that? How does that work for you guys?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of in different silos. So you got your daily content, which is, you know, amazing cards that you see every day. And that's kind of like low hanging fruit for me. I just post them up, give people a heads up that this is on auction. And that's simple. That doesn't take a lot of time. And it's like, you know, it's more for me, it's like dedicating a specific time each day to do that. Yeah. You know, usually it's after my kids go to sleep, you know, when it's quiet and I could just like take a half an hour to just, you know, schedule my posts. So in a way, I guess I bulk up, you know, like you schedule the posts that go up on throughout the day. Yeah. So I, you know, I use a program called Laters for that. And then, you know, the IG reels are, you know, you see like these sales and then you're like, wow, I wonder, you know, how much people bought it for in 2021. and then you see like, oh, wow, that's amazing how much it's dropped. Maybe it's a good buying opportunity for some people. So I'll do those IG reels once every 2 or 3 days, you know? And so it's kind of a rhythm there. And then with the podcast, it's usually once a week, every other Friday and every Tuesday. And I do that with, like you said, it helps with having co-hosts for my podcast. And that keeps, you know, us each other accountable in a way as well. Yeah. So it's amazing. We've been doing it for almost 3 years straight and haven't missed a week. And it's one of those things where if I did it myself, I wouldn't have even lasted a month. maybe a month and a half, maybe, you know? So just kind of, you know, and it's also like knowing yourself as well. Like the podcast is a little more labor intensive, like you said, the editing, the shooting, booking the guests. Yeah. So, you know, you start off with like what you feel you can do. Like once a week seems to be good. You know, you don't want to do, okay, I'm going to do a daily podcast. And then you're like, oh, that's impossible. And you know, it's so at the end of the day, for me, all things is about finding that rhythm that works for you. And then that's how you stay consistent. Nice. And then, you know, we added the every other Friday episode because we felt like we could handle like a shorter second episode every other week, not every week, but even that, you know, that's kind of seeing what we can handle at the time. And that's we've been able to maintain that so far.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's good to hear. Like, it's always good to hear people's, you know, how they handle stuff and get ideas.
Sure.
Because it's, especially with kids. Like I have 2 kids myself and wife, kids, like my wife will kill me if I'm just like, oh, sorry, I need to go make some content. Like, what?
Right.
Get up here, we're making dinner. Like, okay, cool, I'll be right back. But yeah, it's all a juggling act.
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah, for sure. Even today, like even when I threw out the times for when I can meet, it's like working on my kids' schedule. Like I got to pick up my kids at this time
and
things like that. So appreciate the,
I was putting my son's pants on, you know, I'm like, oh, hurry, you're going to get on this podcast.
Again, sounds very familiar to me. All right. I got one more question until we do like our regular rapid fire question at the end, but you don't have to answer this question, but the last post I saw on your IG page, you're talking about everyone having the right to their opinion, except on social media, which is funny because there's some truth in it. You know, that's what makes things funny, when you could realize there's a bit of truth in it. But that post is in the context of SGC versus PSA. So where do you stand on SGC graded cards?
So I think it's like, I would love to actually send more stuff to SGC, but SGC's mm-hmm. resale value is a lot lower than PSA's resale value. Right. So
yep.
That's where I stand on it. Like I probably say 90% of my cards that I grade personally go to PSA, and it's all resale. And I love that SGC, what they're trying to do with their business, and they've seen their resale numbers go up and the amount of people that are using them. So hopefully, fingers mm-hmm. crossed, at some point they'll get close. But it's the same. It's even lower than the difference between PSA and BGS. I mean, you sell the same card, 9.5 versus a PSA 10, and you're looking at probably, 30-40% difference in sales? So SGC is even lower. I think they have a really great handle on the vintage card market. That's their jam.
True.
And but I love the way they look. That's the thing. And
me too.
Yeah, with that post, it was definitely more in that vein of like, you know, you can have an opinion on social media, but just expect that people may not like your opinion. Therefore, you may not want to have your own opinion on social media.
Sure, you got to figure out if it's worth the hassle. But I was just kidding around with that. You know, like I think we agree on that too. Like I love the look of SGC. The tuxedo slabs look great.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of my PC cards, I don't mind sending it to them. And it's, you know, just keeping it in their slabs. But for anything I'm looking to flip, PSA is the game right now, right? And it's like, we say on our podcast all the time, PSA is like a total love-hate relationship. You know, it's like, you know, you never know what you're going to get. But if you get a 10, it's gold. So
it's just me going into the casino one more time, like, oh, come on. You know, I got a 9. I guess I'll just... It seems like it should be good, but right. Oh man, it's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like
totally.
It's like getting 3 pineapples on the machine. You thought you won, but it just gave you right. It just gave you some of your money back.
Yeah, exactly. Love that analogy. All right, just Stock, always appreciate your time, you know, and like I said, I hope you don't mind if we finish off this interview with several rapid fire questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We'd like to ask this one to every guest. What's your favorite PC card at the moment?
My favorite PC card at the moment just showed up. It's Erling Haaland BGS9.
Oh yeah.
So I turned my PC. I turned my PC into a almost strictly Erling Haaland PC, and that's my newest. Okay. My newest baby.
Nice. Yeah, looks great. Any Grail card you're currently chasing?
Yeah, Grail card I'm currently chasing is any one of one of Erling Haaland. It's in a chrome card.
Okay.
But all of those prices are extraordinarily out of my budget right now, but I'm really trying to figure out how to get it.
Yeah. Work up towards it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or trade up towards
I'll
it.
I'll trade up everything I own for that card.
Yeah. All good. All right. You know, as content creators, there's some unique experiences we get to, you know, experience, right? And I'm wondering, you know, what's the coolest thing you've experienced in the hobby ever since making content?
What I said earlier, the coolest thing is this community. It's this crazy. Mm. Listen, I say it to everybody. I usually hate people. Like, I just don't like new people. It's not my jam.
Right.
I have a very small circle of people, but almost everybody I meet in the hobby, I'm like, oh, no, I like this person. You're great. I like you. And it's probably because we're all, like I said, have a similar interest, but it's the community, man.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing how many DMs I'll get of just people just being so nice and like, hey, great. Amazing. I love the content. I love what you're doing. I appreciate you. And it's just like, it's cool, man. It's very uplifting on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome to hear. All right. After seeing your video on how hard it is to time the market, right?
Yeah.
What would you say is your best flip that you actually got? Yeah, like, you know, the timing perfectly right. Or do you have any?
Yeah, I do. I'm just trying to think of which one was the better of the two. Wemby was a
Okay.
The NBA draft prism was definitely just a hack for a while. You could any Wemby that you graded for a good 45-day period and they got a 10 was just making you thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
So that's probably say is
sure.
is tied for that, and then the V Friends cards that came out. I made the gamble of buying a few of those boxes when they dropped, yep. hoping that Gary would come through, and Gary came through. So
love it. Yes, love it.
Those are the two.
Nice. I think I made a similar flip with my V Friends cards as well. So worked out for both of us there.
Yeah, I was like, this has got, I'll just sell these boxes to everybody and then I'll worry about it on the back end. So it worked out.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. On the flip side, I know, you know, like me, you have many more examples of this, but what's a card you sold at the wrong time or a little bit too early, you think?
God. 75% of them? I'm trying to think. I just feel like I just thought about something recently. Who was it? Darn it. There was a couple Brock Purdy cards that I sold way too early because I'm a Niners fan.
I don't blame you.
I'm a Niners fan, and I was like, okay. I was like, what are the chances that this last pick in the draft is actually going to do this? So I was like, I'll probably just sell now, and then it won't be a big deal. And then that same card that I sold for $300 or $400 is now going for like $2,500 or something. So it's like, but that happens, you know, more times than not. So I try not to think about it. Thanks, Clark.
Gotta move on. Sorry to remind you of that. If it makes you feel any better, my worst flip is selling Shohei Ohtani. I didn't think he would do what he did the last year. So that was, I think I bought it for $400 or $500 thinking that was a good deal. And I think it's going for 5,000 right now at this point. So
that's crazy. I don't know. I know this is supposed to be rapid fire, but I don't know. So we had Army ATC on our podcast. He's been around for a long time, Alex.
Yep.
And I don't know if you guys saw it. Like one of the first things, like he was selling his rookie, like out of 25 autoed Bowman Mike Trout. When the capers came out for like $700 a piece. And he's like, at the height, he said that that card went for like $1.2 or $3 million.
No way.
Yeah. So anytime I think about how bad I did on something, I just think back to this story and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I won't. I'm okay.
Thank you for that. Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm going to keep that in the back of my mind as well.
Just think about him selling multiple Mike Trout Bowman first autos. At $300 to $700.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm glad you told me that. All right. Well, I don't know if this is going to be a hometown bias answer, but you know, since this episode, when it comes out, we're scheduling it for the week right before Super Bowl, right? So, and you know, for all our listeners, we're recording this, you know, the conference championship game hasn't happened yet. So there's four teams remaining, but just curious, who are you picking? Are you going with your 49ers or?
Look, I have to go with my 49ers. I honestly think that the Lions have had a great run, but I think Goff is going to Goff, and the Niners are a really well-balanced team. So we'll see. That's my biased answer of the Niners for sure. And I think it's going to be Niners-Ravens. And I'm very scared of the Ravens. If it's Niners-Ravens, I don't think the 49ers are going to win, and I'm a huge fan. The Ravens just have really put together the most balanced squad I've seen in a while. Like all of a sudden, Lamar is a quarterback. You know, it's like this is crazy. So I think Niners and Ravens are going to go, but we'll see.
Okay, that's a good guess. Yeah. Thank you, Lamar Jackson. He was my fantasy football quarterback this year, so thank you. For just playing really well. And the only thing I'll say, you can never count out Patrick Mahomes. He's a wild card in all this, right? You just never know with him.
You know, the script writers, they've come together at the end of the season. Right. And they've done something really well. So,
Who
knows? Like, you can't count
Taylor
out.
Swift.
That's it. The power of Swift. Right. Like, you have all this behind them. So, I won't, if the Chiefs win, I'm not shocked. Because it's just, he's a great quarterback. It's like Brady when everyone wanted to count. Every year, like, oh, he can't win with this team. And then he would just be like, oh,
right.
Here, it's just happening. And I think that Mahomes is going to be in the end, a Brady caliber quarterback, if barring any major injuries. So I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah. We're aligned there. Okay, last question. Because we are Canadian, we like to ask something a little more Canadian-centric for our last rapid-fire question to all of our guests. So we're going to keep the tradition going. Do you have a favorite Canadian athlete, and do you own any of his or her cards?
I don't think I do. I'm very bad at, like, I'm always one of those people that's like, I'm one of those people that's like, oh, they're Canadian? Really? Because my wife's family's from Canada. They grew up in They grew up in Canada. So it's so funny when I have no clue half the time about Canadian athletes or anything like that. I'm not a hockey fair fan. Enough. And then, like, if any baseball, basketball, or football player is Canadian, I'm like, oh, really? That's crazy. Because, like, I can't even tell half the time from, like, the, you know, slight accent or something that people have from Canada. So I'm sorry if I didn't answer that question the way we like it to. Who is your favorite Canadian athlete of all time?
I mean, you know, growing up in Canada, hockey is a thing here, right? Yeah, so Wayne Gretzky obviously is your go-to answer.
Yeah.
Right. You just mentioned you don't really collect hockey cards. So, like, that's your best chance, you know, like 50% of the league is Canadian.
Yeah. Listen, I could have lied to Wayne Gretzky, but I think if I went through every single box of cards that I have, you could maybe find like five or six hockey cards that they just randomly showed up because I was like, oh, look, I'll rip one of these series one things in hopes of getting this rookie that you guys are talking about. So, it's kind of.
Do you primarily collect? Oh, I see. Okay. Do you primarily collect, I guess, besides soccer cards? I think I've seen basketball and football cards on your feed.
Yeah. So I do. Those are your. Yeah. Main? So mainly football, basketball, soccer, baseball, those, like, you know,
baseball, right?
Those types of sports. I'm also like a big collector of like weird nonsense stuff, you know, that just pops up.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, art cards are very fun for me, things like that. So it's a mixture. But yeah, when people ask me, like, now that I'm streaming and stuff too, selling cards, they're like, hockey, and I'm like, sorry, no, I don't have any hockey. Or golf, I'm like, no, I don't have any golf either. So yeah, it's and UFC, yeah, it's, UFC it's doesn't good. Doesn't really stick around for too long either.
So, me neither.
Yeah.
Yeah, me neither. Well, you know, I know you're a big soccer card collector, and I don't know if you are familiar with Alfonso Davies.
Yeah.
At all?
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Canadian. Now you know.
There we go. Canadian. We did it, guys. So I figured it out. I do have Alfonso Davies cards in my collection. So,
oh, there you go. So
that's who I have, guys. That's my favorite Canadian player, guys. Yeah, we do it.
Nice. All right. Usually the last question is, you know, how, depending on how guests answer that, we determine whether they'll be invited again. So you just saved yourself at the very last moment there.
Yeah, seriously. I like Canada a lot. I just don't have the cards.
That's all kidding. All right. So stock and trade. We'll put your Instagram handles and all your, you know, content, where you can find your content, in our show notes. But again, we really appreciate your time and can't wait to see more of your content, especially on my feed, because I get it all the time anyways. So the Instagram and YouTube, they all know what I like to see. So, you know, best of luck to you in the future.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the opportunity. And right back at you. I see you guys all the time. I'd be so looking forward to it and looking forward to hearing the episode.
Okay, another great interview, and thanks again, Stock, for dropping by. We appreciate your time, as always. Let's finish off the show with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. And this is where each of us will choose two cards, and then we each debate which one we would rather invest in. All right, so, Hyung, do you have a Pick One to start things off with?
I do. Let me pull this up. I forgot what it was, though. Hang on. All right. So I got something a little different here, not two specific cards, but we talked a little bit about like inserts and insert autos. Would you rather have an insert auto, like rookie auto? So like a Future Stars or whatever it is, right? Insert auto, a numbered one. So this is numbered of a rookie. Or would you rather have like a Topps Chrome base auto of that same rookie? So if it was Corbin Carroll, you know, last year you pulled the insert auto out of Topps Series 1 or even Topps Chrome, like a Feature Stars auto, or would you rather just have his base Topps Chrome auto instead?
Easy for me.
Inserts numbered.
Go first.
Inserts numbered.
Oh.
It is. A numbered
makes
auto.
It even easier. Makes it even easier. I'm going with the numbered insert auto. Mm. Yeah, I think I'm just, I don't know if it's just the state of the hobby right now or the state of the market in general, but I'm going for the rarity. I put more value on that, even if it's an insert card, right? They're both autographed, so you know that's even. And you know, like I honestly did the same, or I honestly did this in real life. Like I had a Vladdy Guerrero First Bowman base autograph card, which I love, and I sold that recently, and I just lost out on a Blue Refractor 150 auction of the same card. You know, I'm just like trying to upgrade everything to numbered as much as possible while the market's down and more affordable, right? Because I think when everything goes back up, it's going to be the numbered cards in general,
right?
So yeah, just kind of as a principle, I'll take the numbered auto card over even if it's just like your flagship or base, regular base auto card.
Right.
I'm going to agree. I'm also picking the insert for all the reasons that Clark mentioned. I think it's I feel like it's an easy one, but I will say 2023 Topps last year, the Chrome base auto, I loved how they made it the white border. Mm-hmm. Like I loved how, cause you know, previous years, it's the Chrome silver border.
Yeah.
And then the auto base auto is just the same Chrome border with the auto. I think the fact that they differentiated the border and it made it white, the white is clean to begin with. To have like a chromium white, it almost felt like a white refractor. I loved how they differentiated the actual aesthetic of the card for the auto. So is that going to do enough in the future to kind of pump back base autos? I don't know if it does. Probably not, but you know, I just wanted to point that out. They did a great job with the base autos last year.
Yeah, I think 2 years ago, I would have probably just went with the base auto. But I think Ohtani's market kind of opened up things. When the demand is there, I think numbered autos and inserts are great targets. They're great alternatives of scarcity end up becoming like, hey, if I'm a collector, if I'm an Ohtani collector, some of those 83 insert autos were amazing. They're such great cards now, right? So it's like,
yeah, for sure.
And I remember like, you know, the mentality before was, oh, you just get the Topps Chrome auto of Ohtani rather than 83. You know, an insert auto. But now I look at the scarcity and it's just like, well, if the demand's there, I think you're going to get the most value out of the numbered cards, insert auto. And right. I wouldn't have said the same thing like 2 years ago, just because of liquidity. You kind of want the liquidity in the market for the base auto, but I think it's a buyer's market now. So prices are pretty low and I think they're still going to get a little lower, but at the end of the day, you know, baseball season is coming up, so you're going to get that little bump. So, but I'm going to go with the numbered auto as well.
Yeah. Insert and auto. To add to Hyung's point, I think the J-Rod year ruined flagship. So,
yeah,
I don't feel like anybody follows, like nobody knows anymore what flagship image is. Like who knows, like what's Corbin Carroll flagship image? Like you get confused.
So. I would say it was the 2020, like Luis Robert and Bo Bichette.
That too. Good one.
Yeah,
that's a sweep. All right, John.
All right, fellas.
You got one?
Yeah, you know me. I gotta give hockey some love. So, in order to tempt you guys, I'm actually gonna go cross sports. So I'm gonna go. It's gonna be hockey versus baseball. I gotta put in baseball for you guys to a little bit of temptation. So, for anybody that follows hockey, Nathan MacKinnon is torching the NHL in the last 30 days. He has raced back up to the leaderboard. He's got 82 points in 48 games. He just had a 5-point night yesterday. He's crushing it. So his, I'm going to put his Future Watch Auto, which I think is severely undervalued, PSA 10, last sold for $15.99. Future Watch Auto PSA 10, $15.99. Versus Bowman Chrome Juan Soto 2016 Base Auto BGS 95, last sold for $15.30. So two fairly underrated cards. Maybe Juan Soto not as much. But we're going Juan Soto 2016 Bowman Chrome Base Auto BGS 9 Autograph 10, last sold for $15.30 versus Nathan McKinnon Future Watch PSA 10, last sold for $15.99.
Let me see this. That's 2013.
I could go first while Kevin looks up the card. But the same principle applies here for me because the Future Watch is numbered to $9.99, right? And then we just talked about like the base auto, even if it's a first Bowman Chrome, mm-hmm. you know, like I, you know, I have a Mike Trout first Bowman Chrome auto BGS 9, right? And I love it, but I'm like, damn, I wish I spent another thousand or two to get like a refractor, you know, or I don't know how much it costs, but like, I would even go down a grade to get a refractor, you know, that's what I mean. Right.
Right.
So, it's interesting. It makes it more interesting that it's cross sports, right? But I did try to, when I had that Topps Chrome Shohei base auto, I almost traded it for that Nathan McKinnon Future Watch.
Right.
And at that time, it was valued at $3,000-$4,000.
Yeah.
Right. And then I couldn't make the trade happen. But I was surprised when you said, what, $1,600 mm-hmm. For it to come down that far? I think there's opportunity there as well. So. For all those reasons numbered, looks like you're buying the dip and McKinnon's bona fide superstar. I'd love to see it. So I'm going to go with Nathan McKinnon, actually, although I'm obviously a huge Juan Soto fan.
Oh, What does like someone like a Sidney Crosby's like PSA 10 go for? Just out of curiosity.
I think Sidney Crosby and OV PSA 10s are like in the $8,000 to $12,000 range.
Right.
Austin Matthews is at like over 4,000.
PSA 10 for Sidney Crosby, it's last sold December for $11,590.
This is interesting. And the Soto, I'd say at peak, probably that Soto card's probably $3,000 at peak, maybe $4,000, maybe. BGS 9.5, I'd say, because PSA Sounds 10 would have right, been like almost $10,000, right? Yeah, I think although I would normally pick obviously Soto, just because just my trading preference, but in this case, in terms of upside, I think your upside is in potentially the Nathan McKinnon PSA 10 Future Watch Auto. I think there's more room to grow. I personally would pick Soto, but I think in this case, specific case, base card Soto, I'm not going to probably keep in my PC. But something like Nathan McKinnon with a lower pop count probably won't stay on my PC, but it would be easier to flip at that point when the time was ready. So as crazy as this sounds, I'm going hockey. I'm going with the Nathan McKinnon.
Yeah. Damn, I should have made it a little harder. I shouldn't have picked up base auto. I was just trying to look for like same money value.
That's a good value though.
Yeah, for sure. You guys, I think you guys kind of feel what I'm going to pick. It's going to be the Nathan McKinnon. Hang on, last sold it. It actually just sold January 20th, like yesterday, for 50. Wow, that's a great price. I don't know what it sold for before, but I think it's severely, like, he's come corrected quite a bit. He had a bit of I don't know if you want to call it an off year, but a bit of an off year for his standards. He had a bit of a slow start again this year, which I think really suppressed his cards. You're probably missing the window right now to get in on it, because I'd imagine from 1600, it's going to start going up. But yeah, Nathan McKinnon, superstar. He's, you know, some people might not like this take, but I think he's a notch below generational. I wouldn't call him like the Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid level, but he is certainly an A++ superstar. Like Austin Matthews, Steve Yzerman, Joe Sakic, like those top tier perennial all-star superstars. So I think even for investors that are outside of hockey, it's a pretty safe bet to pick somebody like Nathan MacKinnon. Like barring some catastrophic injury, I don't see his cards coming down too much further. So yeah, Nathan MacKinnon, I think it's an easy one.
Nice. I was just looking at his prices. You could have bought a Nathan MacKinnon PSA 10 Future Watch Auto for just over $1,100 back in November.
Oh.
Yeah. That was when to get it. That was the time. But yeah.
With Willie Nylander.
Right. Yeah. Good one. Okay, I'll wrap up this episode with my pick one. Okay, on one side, you got your Luka Doncic Silver Prism PSA 10, right? The iconic one. I used to own one. I sold it at a loss, but it recently sold for just over $1,000. It's down to $1,000 now, okay? Versus the 2023-24 Panini Prism Victor Wembanyama Ice Prism rookie card. Yes, it's the curtain card I'm talking about, but it's Ice Prism. And that also sold, the PSA 10 version of it sold for just over $1,000 as well. So $1,000, you got your Victor Wemby curtain card, but it's Ice Prism. Looks like the Atomic Refractor, right, if you're familiar with that. Versus the more iconic, I feel, in the basketball card world, Luka Doncic Silver Prism for $1,000.
What's you know the pop count on that Wemby?
It doesn't show on card ladder. It says two.
Not yet.
I think
two.
Two. I think Ice Prism super low is pretty common. But I could be wrong.
It's It is. It's not numbered. Pretty common.
Right? Yeah, it's not numbered.
Yeah, it's not numbered. It's
But yeah. But the total population is six, so it's very early, right? You can expect that number
to
grow.
Fairly, yeah, it's still early. Let me see how many there are for sale, just so that I know.
it's like getting kind of like a green, like a green prism or something like that.
Yeah, that's where I see it. I'm gonna go Luka Silver. Ooh. Like for me, it's like there's still a lot of, I think, for me, if a play isn't bad to have many Luka Silvers. I don't think that's a bad play.
Huh, okay.
You treat it like the new base, right? Where you get 10 at the right price, and then, you know, you just kind of sit on that and then cash out again, because it's 1,100, you said?
Yes, just over 1,000 actually, 1,000.
Yeah, so we said 1,000 was like, if it ever hit that, that's the buying spot, right? So I think you're pretty low, and it has a high pop count still, but it's still relatively low.
Pop count's 2,200.
Yes, yeah, pretty high still. Mm-hmm. But I think it still has room to come down, to be honest, at that pop. So I think 800, 900 would be the ideal price, but
yeah.
I think that Wemby's way overpriced.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, similar to Clark's personal rule book of collecting by default numbered cards, I'm going to go with my personal rule book of not collecting hyped cards in years one and two. So it becomes very easy. Like I get it. The Wemby, like this guy, you know, I don't know about generational, but he looks good, man. Like I think he's going to be a really amazing player fantasy wise. I think he's already like in the top 10, you know, sometime very soon he's probably going to be the number one pick in fantasy. So the potential is there. It is Ice Prism. It's kind of a not so special parallel. Neither is the silver on the Luka's end, but I think kind of like what Hyung is saying, trading in like the new base, like the Luka Prism silver is like, that's a well established price, right? Like the you know, like in terms of price movement, is it going to dip lower? It can, yes, but it's a very established price in the marketplace. Whereas the Victor Wembanyama, like this is, the hype is still there. And maybe, you know, maybe the hype's going to get crazier, but I'm betting that those cards are going to come down by quite a bit. So yeah, give me Luka Silver.
Man, this is a boring pick one segment because all three of our cards are going to be a straight sweep. Yeah.
Sweep.
Luka Doncic, the Silver Prism. Easy one for me as well for all the reasons you guys already mentioned. And, you know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw the Ice Prism go down to half of what it is now, $500, right? Because there's going to be so many Victor Wembanyama cards out there on the, in the market. And it's more, even more being graded as we speak, right? So yeah. And then, you know, last episode, we talked about the Hall of Fame and, you know, it's the COVID era card is probably the Luka Doncic Prism card. You know, that image is pretty up there and recognizable for those who came back to the hobby during the COVID era. So yeah, Luka Doncic Silver Prism for me as well. All right, that wraps up another episode of Cards to the Moon. We appreciate you guys. Again, one more time, we'd like to thank Stock and Trade for coming on and doing the interview. And yeah, we expect to have many more interviews throughout the year. So stay tuned for future episodes. We'll see you guys shortly. Talk soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at @5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.